digital part of the supply chain, whether it's robotics, software systems, e-commerce platforms, are really starting to influence how businesses are creating their operating model and competing with each other.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hey everyone, welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP, and welcome to episode 101. And my guest on the show today is Eskander. Eskander, would you like to introduce yourself and commiserations on missing out on episode 100?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, happy to be part of episode 101. Tom, good to be with you today. My name is Eskander Yavar. I'm a partner with BDO USA. BDO is the fifth largest public accounting firm globally. My interest is really in helping the marketplace innovate and drive their supply chain capabilities.
Okay, cool. That all sounds great. You recently produced a survey and the results of that survey that were quite interesting. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So BDO produces an annual CFO survey. In this case, we interviewed about 600 CFOs across various industries, 100 within the manufacturing space. And the results are telling. Year over year, we're seeing a lot more investment from an innovation and digital perspective with manufacturers, whether it's on the factory floor or within their supply chain. That trend continues in this year's survey results, with the majority of manufacturers, CFOs, responding that they will be making those investments again in 2021. So we're excited about what the future holds from that perspective.
Okay, what kind of investments are we talking about?
You know, ultimately, these companies are looking to invest from a technology perspective in everything from order fulfillment technologies to distribution technologies that allow for more of a touchless distribution center from, I think, robotics. We're seeing a lot more companies that are born into this digital age, creating their operating model with a technology-first mentality versus some of the legacy companies that are trying to create the business case and get the capital expenditure approved to make those investments from a technology perspective. So definitely starting to see a paradigm shift in how technology is playing into this space.
Okay. And how is technology playing into that space? I mean, what are the differences you're seeing between those two paradigms of companies you talked about?
Yeah, Tom, you know, it's really interesting. So I'll take a great example for the audience. There's a retailer that's direct to consumer, strong e-commerce platform, manufactures women's apparel in China, distributes to a U.S. market. They're 8 years old, and they've gone from nothing to about $150 million in revenue in that period of time. Their operating model really employs them to drive an e-commerce platform that's directly tied into an order fulfillment process within their distribution center that's heavy in terms of robotics from a pick, pack, ship perspective. That allows them to actually fulfill their orders at 20% of industry standard in terms of costs. So, you know, not only are they rapidly growing, they're doing it in a very profitable way. Nice case study. And, you know, now they're faced with the opportunity to open a net new distribution center. And the question becomes, do they want to make a similar capital investment from a technology perspective to do it as efficiently? Or is it more of a short-term play for them just to serve a certain part of the market? So those are the types of scenarios we're seeing where the digital part of the supply chain, whether it's robotics, software systems, e-commerce platforms, are really starting to influence how businesses are creating their operating model and competing with each other.
And how would you contrast that to a non-digital company? I mean, what kind of challenges are they seeing that they're not able to address as easily?
Yeah, I think challenge number one is really around culture and change management, right? Convincing the executive team to make the investment from a capital perspective into a new technology that has a future ROI to it. You know, what we are suggesting often to our customers is start with the proof of concept and then go from there and gain some momentum that way. But ultimately what we don't see, especially in the market we play in, is a lot of companies reinventing themselves, company 2.0 with a digital sense. We're seeing, you know, an internal momentum to really year over year, create a business case, drive proof of concept results that are successful, and really start to adapt some of the technologies that are available to them. Our hypothesis is that's a slower trajectory in terms of adoption and improvement than companies that are born into that native digital landscape.
Yeah, I mean, It has to be hugely challenging for companies that, you know, are not, as you say, digital natives, are not born into it, because they have a lot of sunk costs in their existing setup, for want of a better expression. Plus, they've got business processes which go one direction, and to, you know, do a digital transformation might take them in a completely different direction, which would cannibalize the existing business. And, you know, nobody wants to do that, do they?
Not at all. Not at all. What we're seeing is it really takes the sponsorship from the entire business. So this just can't be a whim of a supply chain leader or a operational leader. These types of changes, these types of transformations take the sponsorship from the CEO and all the C-suite down to have a coordinated effort in terms of where the company wants to go. Usually it's a reaction to a non-traditional competitor entering their marketplace, i.e. Amazon distributing now products that they typically manufactured. It's been a lot of what we're starting to see. You know, market share is getting eaten up by a non-traditional competitor, and they have to now react in an innovative way to survive.
Yeah. And of course, this is the Digital Supply Chain podcast. Can you talk to some of the supply chain oriented things you've seen?
Yeah, you know, there's an interest in terms of the idea of supply chain in today's world. So 3 years ago, if you read any of the surveys of CEOs from some of our peer group, supply chain was number 19 or 20 in terms of importance for those executives. 95% of all businesses globally have had some type of supply chain impact from the pandemic. And the results today are it's top of mind for these executive teams, right? It's number one, number two, or three in terms of investment and infrastructure and technology and importance of the initiative to the company. That coupled with some of the international trade policy we're seeing is forcing organizations to think through really vetting the supply chain from a due diligence perspective. Not only, you know, who they're partnering with, but what type of technology capabilities those partners are employing. How is the data being transferred seamlessly so there's end-to-end visibility and where is any product at any point in the supply chain? You're seeing a lot of companies offer from the moment you place an order to the time it's delivered to either the retail location or to your home, where demand has shifted during these times. Demands have definitely shifted to the individual in their home. You know, transparency into the supply chain, which is enabled through some of this end-to-end technology.
Yeah, very much. And if we think about manufacturing, for example, and business transformation, are we seeing many of the manufacturers change their business model or, you know, diversify into different kind of revenue models, any of that kind of thing?
Absolutely. I think today with the power of the technology that enables the supply chain in these manufacturers, so think analytics and business intelligence, think all the data that's being thrown out by some of the sensor technology, many manufacturers are starting to understand that there are additional revenue streams, often in a subscription basis, that they can provide because of their products and the data that product throws off. So I'll give you a good example, Tom.
Great.
We worked directly with a manufacturer of preemption equipment in the public safety space. So this company creates the hardware that allows for emergency vehicles to get a line of sight to a street light to provide a green light in emergency situations.
Gotcha.
You don't want to have an excuse that you were not able to get to an emergency or deliver a patient who's in potentially a life-threatening situation because you had a red light in the traffic signal. They were bought out by a private equity firm recently who was heavy into some of the digital parts of the supply chain and innovating different revenue streams in their businesses that they owned, and really challenged that company to think through the data that their hardware produces. The hardware produces the data. Imagine a city with all this hardware, traffic patterns, the amount of times they had red lights versus green lights in emergency situations. There's a lot of compliance around that business. And what was happening is their customers were employing data analysts on an individual basis to create some of this reporting. The model that was flipped was this manufacturer had all that data available to them. They created a analytics platform on Amazon's web services and offered the subscription to that reporting capability to fulfill the compliance requirement to their customers on a monthly basis. So instead of the customer now employing a $100,000 a year analytics professional and doing that each and every time they're subscribing to a $30 a month analytics model that allows them to get the reporting that they need. New business model for the manufacturer, really convenient offering for the customer base, different revenue stream altogether. That effort actually took the entire organization to align in terms of legal, who owns the data, finance, what's the investment going to look like, operations, how they're going to serve the platform and make sure it stays, you know, accurate and up 100% of the time. They successfully implemented that last year and been enjoying the additions of a new revenue stream ever since.
And they've maintained their old business model at the same time. This is a new additional business model that they've rolled out on top of their existing one.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Enabled by their legacy model.
Nice. Yeah. Because when we talk about digital transformation, very often people are talking about, you know, replacing one business model with another. If you think of like the Rolls Royces and the GEs going for the power by the hour. So in other words, giving away the engine and then charging up for its use. But of course, that's quite challenging to do. And you're risking, as I mentioned earlier, cannibalizing your existing business. But if you can build a service onto your existing business and have be it additional to rather than competing with, then of course it becomes a lot easier to roll out.
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today. Influence the future.
Absolutely. That's the ideal win-win situation. We haven't seen many instances of cannibalization in the marketplace. So it's really about education on the opportunity that this technology, whether it's an analytics platform or some of the data that's thrown off by the sensors, allows these traditional product-based companies to take advantage of. And that's the trick. It's a new phenomenon that's enabled through this digital world that we live in today. And we spend a lot of time just educating on the opportunities.
Okay. It's all this is based very much on organizations having sensors and communications and ways of analyzing that data. And not everybody has that, or if they do have it, not many of them realize that this can be a valuable asset, allowing them to stand up a new business. I have a particular example in mind that I've come across, and it was the example of a company called Continental. They are a German, you might know them as a tire manufacturer. And the rubber part of their business accounts for 40% of their annual revenue. In fact, the other 60% comes from the smarts that are in most of the vehicles that most manufacturers sell today. So if you own a car today, there's a good chance that there's a Continental part in it that was sold directly to the manufacturer of your car. You're unaware, but it's there. You know, so it's the typical B2B model. So Continental were rolling out a product 2-3 years ago. They were going on this project to roll out a predictive maintenance project where they would take in data from vehicles that were connected, from the sensors that they had sold to the vehicle manufacturers. And this was for fleets of vehicles, where the fleet manager would be able to get a notification if a particular part of a car was going to break down, so that you would minimize the downtime for the vehicle. The fleet manager would know, oh, this particular vehicle, this particular component is going to break down in a week's time. I'll order in a spare, we'll whip it out, replace it, you know, before it breaks down, minimum downtime for the vehicle, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Very nice project. While they were developing that product, they were approached by a weather company. And the weather company said to them, hang on a second, you're collecting all this kind of information from vehicles. You're collecting, amongst other things, time of day, GPS, external air temperature, windscreen wiper status, fog light status. The weather company realized that these vehicles were little mini weather stations throwing off
real-time weather information, hyper-local. And so suddenly Continental had a whole new, to your earlier point, whole new business additive to their existing one based on the data that they were collecting already from vehicles. So it's a point I often make to executives. If you have a data collection project, always be aware there can be a left field use of that information that hasn't occurred to you, and try and, you know, open your mind or try and get other people to look at the data you're collecting and see if there are other uses of that data that haven't occurred to you.
Yeah, I think that's a really great example. You know, we talk about data is the new oil, data is the new currency, but that's the application of it, right? Mm. Because you have a captive data set, what can you do with that data set to serve your market better? You know, I have a similar example, Tom, electric motor manufacturer. So imagine motors that go into the refrigeration units that you see at your local grocery store. So you go to the grocery store, I know from our past conversations, are in love with butter pecan ice cream. When you walk in, you want to make sure that butter pecan ice cream is nice and cold and you can purchase it. So here's where the intelligent supply chain and the digital supply chain that we're talking about in this podcast actually relates. In the old world, the electric motor manufacturer, who's part of the supply chain to the refrigeration manufacturer, provides the motor. The motor has a certain performance life to it. And when it fails, there's an immediate impact to the market, meaning Tom goes in and the ice cream is melted because the refrigeration unit is not working. Humans by nature are very particular about what they want when they want it. There's an expectation set around service level. I expect my ice cream. I expect it to be cold. I don't want to go to 3 stores to get it. So you can imagine from a grocery store perspective, low margins, high volume business, you don't want to discourage your customer not to come back. What this electric motor manufacturer company is doing now is adding preventative maintenance sensor technology to their motors to throw off alerts before failure. So you don't have an event where the ice cream is melted. You're actually servicing the electric motor in the refrigeration unit ahead of time, and there's no disruption in terms of service level. And I think that's where we're going as an organization in terms of the supply chain. There's a certain performance level set on how that supply chain performs from a quality, on-time delivery, transparency perspective. And that bar has been set really, really high. Mm. Yesterday, I was able to see a commercial from Amazon that talks about 2-hour delivery times on groceries. Wow. Now, you and I can remember back in the early part of this century when companies were trying to do that fresh direct model. In 2000, 2001, it was just before its time. Now we have Amazon talking about 2-hour delivery time. There's an expectation set on KPIs, on service levels that all of the world will have to catch up to. Our children are digital native now. Mm. They expect to know when an item is going to arrive, at what time, and if it's not there at that time, why not? It's a different world we're living in. And I will tell you, based on all of our, not only our CFO surveys, but our digital transformation surveys that we produce at BDO, that trend will continue into the future. I believe nobody in our audience will argue with we're going to revert back to a non-digital world.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. And these new business models that are, you know, being spun up as a result of this, are you seeing companies take any kind of innovative actions to make these happen for themselves?
So I definitely think there is an audience and an appetite for companies, whether it's capital investors, private equity companies, or just the founders of the startups that are more prone to creating an operating model that employs these types of technologies. I think that's the key, right? And where they do that, they're able to fulfill orders at a fraction of the cost. They are able to accelerate their growth curves rapidly. And I think that's the key, is it's the mindset from the beginning, the strategic plan that's getting employed versus what we talked about earlier in companies that are trying to learn to educate themselves and adapt. It's just a slower process for them.
Okay. And the survey you did, though, was of CFOs. What kind of considerations do they have around investments in supply chain that, you know, make this so?
Yeah. So because supply chain carries the cost line to a lot of what's delivered from these companies, CFOs are constantly looking for ways to improve profitability. Because of the disruption from the pandemic, it's now made them a front and center topic for them. How are they going to improve their resilience of their supply chain, They're looking at every node in the supply chain to make sure there's reliability put in place. And ultimately, they're looking for efficiency in terms of the performance of the chain and cost of the chain. So they're more keen now than ever before in the past to make technology investments to actually drive some of those goals, right? Efficiency, reduction of cost, et cetera. I would tell you that wasn't the case pre-pandemic, but because this pandemic has impacted so many businesses, folks can't get computer parts these days. Simple video cards that were going for $700 in the past, or scalpers are taking all the initial allotments from these companies and jacking up prices. I tried to purchase bicycles for my family last year. We're still on back order. Wow. Right. And that's a result of really two things. That's a result of the healthcare of our workforce, social distancing, and the increase in demand. And companies are still trying to catch up with that gap. A lot of demand in the beginning parts of this pandemic, not a lot of availability of capacity, and it's going to be quite some time. What we found through our survey is that companies that were interrupted by the pandemic, their supply chain was interrupted. They had a stoppage in terms of manufacturing output somewhere along the supply chain, are taking far longer, up to a year and a half, to catch up with demand versus those that didn't have any interruption in their capacity over the supply chain. And that's a big deal. I mean, we're talking about business as usual going through the pandemic versus a year and a half behind.
Wow. And for organizations, what is the biggest kind of impediment to moving towards a more digital supply chain?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it comes down to capital expenditure request. Long-term view versus short-term view. What we're finding is companies that have a longer-term view can more easily justify the return on the CapEx versus companies that are just trying to fulfill a tactical short-term need, service a certain part of the market without a heavy investment to prove out if that's a continuing business for them, if they're really going to capture the market share they want to. So it's about perspective. Those who have a longer-term view make the capital expenditure investment because they know it's going to return. Those who don't plan to, you know, be in that part of the market for a long time are having a harder time justifying the investment.
Okay, superb. Eskander, we've gone over the 20-minute mark now. Is there any question I haven't asked you that you think I should have? Any points we've not discussed that you think, you know, people should be aware of?
You know, to the point of this fabulous digital supply chain podcast and the business that we are in at BDO, I think it's important that our customers, the audience understands that this trend around the digitalization of our global economy is ingrained in both the business fabric and our social fabrics or personal fabrics of our lives. And the trends will just continue. There's no turning back at this point. So I would encourage the audience to continue to be liaisons and champions for helping companies drive this transformation in their business, whether it's a small step in terms of a proof of concept, or, you know, a new startup that's digitally born in a native environment. Mm-hmm. We will be having this conversation for decades to come as the world continues to transform. I'm excited about it.
Likewise. Okay, Eskander, if people want to know more about yourself or BDO or the survey or any of the things we discussed on the podcast today, where would you have me direct them?
Yeah, absolutely. You can direct them to our public website. And I know you'll put that in some of the commentary, and that you'll find some of our thought leadership, including the survey and how to contact our professionals, including myself.
Okay, superb. Eskander, that's been great. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
Tom, appreciate the time. Good luck.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital-supply-chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.